And it's Tuesday, October 28th, 2025. This is the Hagmann Report. I'm Doug Hagmann. I want to thank you so much for your belief and trust in this platform. Thanks for tuning in tonight. I want to welcome you to this week, our week, an abbreviated week, I guess, you know, with Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday again this week. I want to thank you for your patience in that regard. I want to thank everyone who joined me on Thursday and allowed me to kind of give you a good rundown of what's taking place. Have a great show lined up for you tonight. I mean, just a tremendous episode. A lot of information that I think, again, you know, looking at the platform, looking at the responsibility of having a platform, taking it very seriously. I want the information to be there where it's instructive and at least somewhat inspirational, you know, after it's all said and done. But it's informative, instructive, and most of all, meaningful to you. I say that because right now we are faced with, in this digital age that we're in, with everyone carrying around a phone, more information. But that information contains less meaning. Does that make sense to you? I think it does. But it was meant to be that way. So the headlines, for example, the headlines we have today, we'll touch on most of them. The big thing, of course, that's really kind of taken the digital media or the online media by storm, of course, is the shutdown of the EBT or food stamps program, welfare program. And now you have people taking to the various platforms, TikTok and X, and I mean, you name it out there. They're taking these platforms and saying, you know what? Okay. We're going to steal the food. Screw you. Consider that we have 42.5 million people receiving food stamp benefits. All right. Consider that. And now consider the population of our country. That's a great percentage of the population. But when you dig deeper into those numbers, you can see exactly what's going on. And again, you can see everything is by design. So in preparation for today, and I've had this video in my pocket for a while. And Eric the Tech, just for your advanced knowledge, in the show notes, folks, this will be source video A. And folks, you can get to the show notes after the show was put up, usually about an hour after the show ends. It's put up at Hagmann, HAGMANNPI.com, HagmannPI.com. And all you have to do is click on the title, and that opens up all kinds of information. And every link, every video, everyone that needs to be, you know, all the attributes, the credits to the sources are right there. And but I've had this for a while. When I say for a while, to me, that's more than a couple of days. And I was looking for the right time, the right moment to play this. And I think this is it. Going into tonight, I was thinking, you know, there is so much going on. And I do have some in-depth information to provide to you. But there's so much going on that sometimes we fail to realize, and this goes for all of us, I think. It certainly goes for me. You fail to realize that a couple of things. First of all, we do not live in a virtual world, okay? We live in the real world. We don't sit in somebody's basement, mom's basement, or grandma's basement, or your own basement, and live vicariously through your phone or through your computer. If you do, I suggest you change that. But for most of us, we don't do that. There's a real world out there. But in the deep dive, to assess where we're at right now, we have to understand one thing. All of this didn't start with our phones. All of this didn't start with the internet. No. This started the programming, the hijacking of our attention, of even our identities. And I don't mean that in a literal sense where, you know, someone steals your identity. I'm talking about who you are. The soul, the body, the mind of the person. It's all being hijacked. It's been hijacked. And there's a lot of programming going on. So without going further into that, I want to play this in segments, okay? This is just a terrific video. And you know, folks, I think everyone knows, I have a lot of respect, a lot of admiration for a behavioral, someone who's taught behavioral profiling, Chase Hughes. I referenced and cited and played some of his videos last week. And again, I do have a weak spot, a soft spot for forensic sciences, and that does include the behavioral sciences, the behavioral profiling, in the forensic, in the criminal world especially. Whether in law enforcement, you know, you can be in the box with the suspect, perhaps, or behind the glass. It doesn't matter. It's a valuable tool to engage in behavioral profiling. Okay. And this helps you, for example, just navigate the day, dealing with people, your interactions with people. It's an important thing to really kind of come to grips with and understand, because about two-thirds of our interaction with others is nonverbal. If you think about that for a second, two-thirds of our interaction with others is nonverbal. So, okay. When you look, for example, I'm going to be showing you some other videos from the FBI, too, of the January 6th pipe bomber, all right? That alleged whole plot. I'm going to be showing you some newly released videos and commenting on that. There is some nonverbal communication that you can pull from that, but that's not why I'm going to show that. I'm going to show that for the evidence, the value that it supplies for evidence purposes. Okay. So, but just think about that. So if all of our interaction, or if two-thirds of our interaction is nonverbal, then we should kind of pay attention to certain things. And then we're going to talk about psyops too, because I'll tell you something. Wow. If you can learn how to spot a psychological operation or psyop, I mean, you can, if there's nothing, boy, if there's nothing else that you really get from tonight, if you learn how to spot a psyop, all the elements that are common with the psyops, man, that's something to take home with you. Okay. And some other things. And we're going to be talking about some not so good stuff about, good in the sense that the she-devil, if you know what I'm talking about, the she-devil was, in fact, jailed last month in Mexico. But understand what this she-devil has done, and it's worse than you can imagine. And her actions were, of course, facilitated by the globalists, the people in power, political and otherwise, here in the U.S. But first, again, to lay the groundwork, how did we get here, and how did they get into our heads before? And I'm not sure if this is in this video or not. Before. The war was with, our handlers or controllers would attempt to control us through pills. Now it's pixels. It's pixels. And before I run this, I wrote down something here and I wanted to just pass this on. It, also something to remember. And this is just from my heart. Again, these are friendly, hopefully helpful pieces of little tidbits of information. Emotional responses suppress critical thinking. Okay? Think about that. Emotional responses suppress your critical thinking. How many times have we let off with an emotional response and found that, you know, our assessment of the situation was not quite right, or if, even if it was proper, the response was not. So just keep it. Hey, write that down. Emotional responses suppress critical thinking. All right. But let's go to the foundational video for today. Understand that, because I've made this mistake too. Well, kind of everything really began with the programming, you know, with the phones and the internet and the what you watch and what you see. And oh, it goes back deeper than that. And to encapsulate that or to embrace that and explain it better than I ever could, this is a video. Now it's broken down into chapters and they're very short. In terms of the subject matter, this is only like 10 minutes, but it's broken down into chapters. So please pay attention to this. Again, the link will be in the program description box at HagmanPI.com, but I think this really gives us the idea, the information that shows us where we're at today, how we got here, why we're here, and I think it offers some insight into where we are headed. And this is especially important with all of the headlines we're seeing today. So this is source of video one. Let's go to the first chapter. And well, this is kind of the introduction. And again, this is by Chase Hughes. And I follow him individually, as well as the entire behavior panel on YouTube. Yeah, YouTube, what can I tell you? That's where they're at. But I guess, you know, yeah. It is what it is. And you saw, folks, did you see Michael Savage, of course, got a second strike now. Hey, again, you play in that arena and you talk about the things that are controversial to them, especially topical. I'm not talking about instructive things. I'm talking about topical news items. Expect that to happen. But there it is. All right. And again, he still owes me a steak dinner out in San Fran. So not that I would ever go there, but you get the idea. All right, this is source video 8. Let's go to the first part. There it is.
If you had that feeling like your life doesn't belong to you, something is off, maybe the choices, the emotions, even the arguments in your head aren't really yours, that is not you being paranoid at all. That is the program running. And the crazy part about all of this is it didn't start with your phone. It didn't start with TikTok. It started well over 100 years ago in a quiet office with men in suits mapping out the human mind like a machine that they could rewire. But here's what almost nobody understands. There is a reason that outrage feels addictive. There's a reason that despair feels normal. There's a reason that you wake up with dread and blame yourself for it. It was designed. And the moment you see how, you can't unsee it. So let me rip this open for you. Where did all of this programming really begin?
Okay, that's the introduction, chapter one, I guess. But think about that. How many times have you woken up with that feeling of dread? Or how many times have you had that after looking at your news feed? It's, man, it is there. But you know why it's there? It was designed to always be there. And there was, again, I wrote some things down here. And what is happening with us? And you know, Look, this platform is guilty of it, either directly or through guests and what have you. But what are we talking about here? We're talking in large part, especially with psychological operations or PSYOPs, we're talking about fear-driven behavior. I wish I could read my own writing. I guess that's probably the good thing about digital notes. Fear-driven behavior. And that is something that has really grabbed us, right? It's, don't we, on some occasions, do we not model our behavior based on a very primal fear response? I think so. Am I getting too introspective here? Eric the Tech, am I just like, am I ready for the pasture? What do you think, man? Huh? No? I'm okay? Okay. All right. But again, keep all of this in mind as we address the issues tonight in the program. And I would add this. I don't like the word program for the show because that has negative connotations. I don't like show for the episode or for the show. Again, that's something totally different. It's not a show. I'm not even sure what this is. But I digress. Let's go to the next chapter. Here it is.
It was a quiet office in London in 1921. This is the Tavistock Institute. They said it was about helping soldiers heal, and it wasn't. And once they cracked all of these things open that they did there, the experiment never ended. Officially, Tavistock was about treating shell shock. This is what they used to call PTSD. It was trauma therapy. It was a beautiful cover story. But what they actually found, trauma doesn't just break people. It softens them up, makes them pliable. They were not fixing soldiers like they told everybody. They were testing civilians. They were running war psychology on entire populations. Grief, confusion, and fear. Tavistock used all of these things like tools in a toolbox. Once you know which lever makes a herd turn into a stampede, you don't need speeches or ballots anymore. You just pull the lever. So after World War II, Tavistock moves into media and education and government. Its fingerprints are on NATO, PSYOPs, Cold War propaganda, and the actual birth of mass advertising. Then this guy comes on the scene a little later. His name is Edward Bernays, and he's actually Sigmund Freud's nephew, which is super weird. But instead of analyzing dreams and stuff like that, he turned the unconscious into a marketplace. And Edward Bernays is the reason that women smoked in public. He branded cigarettes as torches of freedom for women. He's the reason that we link bacon and eggs with breakfast. It was an ad campaign. It was never a tradition at all. Edward Bernays is the reason that Guatemala's democracy got overthrown. He sold it as fighting communism so that this company called United Fruit could keep their plantations. And he weaponized desire. He made war fashionable. He made democracy emotional. A few years down the road, we have this Operation Mockingbird program that comes out through the CIA.
Okay, we blew through a couple of chapters there already. Or maybe this is a good time to, well, regardless, I'm going to punch in here with this anyway. So you saw pretty much the origins of Tavistock and what it served initially, right? You saw that. All right. And I was watching the chat and I love the comments. I really do. BR7562. Point taken. You know, hey, when we're not here for 3 or 4 nights, then you can hit the road, Jack, right? I get that. And thank you for that, because that means a lot to me. You know, when people say, well, it's a numbers game. Okay. Not really. I mean, to me, not really, because you could have a million followers on X. How many do you really know and interact with? Not many. I'm just saying. The same with Facebook. But I'll say this about Facebook. Facebook is more of a psychological operation and a data harvesting operation than anything else. And it's used by criminals and the government alike. Okay, I'm telling you right now, if you and your wife post pictures contemporaneous with your honeymoon or a vacation in the Bahamas, for example, you don't think that sometimes there are criminals looking for a place to rob, you know, the unoccupied? I've seen it. I've seen it happen. As a matter of fact, I could tell you about a number of cases after the birth of MySpace and Facebook where people would post things that I would use in the courtroom. I would actually testify to various things in the courtroom. And I'm serious. It got a lot of people in trouble. But then again, so BR7562, thank you for that. Also, forgive me for not grabbing this. Who said this? Maybe Puke Bucket. I'm not sure. Boomers, right? Talking about boomers. And placing a lot of the onus of what's taking place right now on us. And I think of people in this age bracket. All right. That's painting with a pretty broad brush. However, if you do resemble that remark, okay, I get that. But there are, again, it's dangerous to do that. That's all I'm going to say about that. Now, with respect to what has been shown, or because I've watched this probably 50 times, 60 times, either what has been shown or what is about to be shown, think about, well, especially as you watch this part, think about the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act and think about Obama. So you can see where he's saying, look, Chase Hughes is saying, this didn't start just with the iPhones and social media and all that. This programming of us, hijacking of us, taking away our identities and softening up the matter that's between our ears. Nah, it didn't start with that. It began a long time ago. And another thing about boomers, I'll just say this, you know, as somebody who was working in the field and being a first responder before they were called first responders, and it, you know, back in the day, my day, that's, you know, when you're like fit for a pasture when you start saying stuff like that. We did not have, there was no PTSD. He's got PTSD. I mean, if you want to get down and real about it, I mean, I remember one night, and it was two days before, it was December 23rd. And I remember grabbing someone by the, there was a car accident, a horrific car accident. And I remember grabbing this man underneath his shoulders. And but another thing, the vehicle was on fire. Rarely do they explode, but anyway, there was a fire in this car. So I grabbed him by their shoulders, and my partner at the time had his legs, and we were going to move him out my way through, you know, head first, right? Problem was, I had his upper body. My partner had his lower body. And we were on different sides of the car. You get the idea, right? And it was horrific. It was a horrific scene. Obviously, the man was not living. Just married. I remember this like it was yesterday. Just married. First Christmas together. Horrible. Horrible. But, you know, back then, how did you handle that? How did we handle that? There was no, well, you should go to therapy for a day or two or three. You should take it the next day. No, you went, you know what you did? After the shift was over, you went, you got drunk. You went to the bar and you slammed down a few or more than a few, which is probably why I got some issues. Didn't help, probably. We didn't need to be coddled. We didn't have anyone there saying, well, you know, working, no one sat down with us to explain how, you know, hey, to counsel us. My goodness, no. Not, now, is that, why did I say that? Because in relation to the boomer response, I just, you know, hey, look, and I'm damn sure people who were served in Vietnam and they didn't have, you know, the, well, he's got PTSD. Yes, there was shell shock. Yes, in World War One and World War Two, there was, you know, advanced shell shock, right? Just by different names. PTSD then and all of this. So on behalf of boomers out there, some of us are pretty damn tough, all right? All right. Did I make my point? Maybe I didn't. Maybe I digressed too much. But again, tonight, tomorrow, watch this entire, that entire, we're going to finish it up here, but watch the entire video in its entirety in a quiet place. Take notes. Do whatever you need to do, right? And then subscribe to his channel. Subscribe to the Behavioral Panel. You're going to learn so much. I've never seen, and I've got his course materials, and I mean, it's just a fantastic lesson in life and how we're being manipulated. All right, let's continue this.
The easiest way to control a country was by headlines. They thought it was about threats and war and the potential for some kind of bomb being dropped, but it was just headlines and news. That's all you needed to control a whole country. Operation Mockingbird put CIA operatives inside the biggest newsrooms in America, not just whispering in journalists' ears. They were writing the actual stories. Some of them were even newscasters. They were planting every single angle that they were told to plant. And by the 70s, over 400 journalists were on the payroll of the CIA. Anchors, editors, columnists, people that our parents trusted, that were trusted by almost the whole country. So now we've got the CIA's infiltrated the entire news media, and along comes this other program called MKUltra. The CIA went full-blown mad scientist. They studied these weird experiments on people, some of them even unwilling, that included electroshock therapy and sleep deprivation in high doses of LSD, which is a hallucinogen, and even sensory isolation. It was about breaking minds completely open in the cleanest way that they possibly could. And it was about erasing identity. Keep that in mind. In the 50s, they were becoming experts at erasing people's identity. And in Canada, during this whole thing, this guy named Dr. Ewan Cameron, he ran patients through this thing that he called psychic driving, and he looped recorded messages into their ears while blasting them with drugs and shock therapy until they forgot their own name. And some of the patients there even forgot how to use the bathroom and how to walk and who their family was. When the files leaked in 1970, the public kind of gasped and freaked out. But by then, the experiments were already baked into the military and media playbooks around the entire world. The tools worked exceedingly well, and the ethics to them had no bearing on whether or not they should keep going. Fast forward to today. They used to use pills. Now they use pixels. And the pharmacy they're using is in your brain. It's all your own neurochemicals and your own neurotransmitters being used against you. And the dosage of these things is measured in how many headlines and hashtags and notifications and videos that you see. Tavistock engineered this confusion. Bernays taught them how to sell it. Mockingbird made it gospel to the entire world. And MKUltra buried the witnesses. So now the experiment lab isn't in some weird underground bunker. It's in your frickin' pocket. So on your phone, every swipe, every pause, every time your eyes linger 1 second too long, your nervous system is being mapped out by an algorithm. And it's not for your benefit whatsoever. It's for theirs. Algorithms don't just recommend a bunch of stuff to us. They condition us. And this is beyond proven. They learn what spikes your cortisol, your stress chemicals, what makes you flinch, what makes you pissed off. They feed you more and more until your nervous system belongs to them. You're being taught what to care about, what to hate, what to fear, slowly, without any friction, until the thoughts in your head aren't even yours anymore. Outrage is the cheapest lever you could pull in a human being. That's why everything online is on fire. Doesn't matter what you're mad about, just that you are mad. Because anger glues your eyes to the screen. And while you're locked in reaction mode, something deeper, a lot deeper in your brain is being carved into you. If you look around right now, nobody is okay. Anxiety is baseline. Kids are depressed before they even hit puberty right now. Adults are medicated just to function. And that low dread or that weird feeling in your chest, people call that like personal failure or anxiety. That's the program working exactly as it was designed. A distracted, exhausted, divided population is a population that cannot resist. The mental health crisis is not accidental. It's the exhaust fumes.
Pause that. That, to me, is perhaps one of the most important statements that that was made in that video. The mental health crisis we see today, it's not accidental. It was all planned out. And it's interesting, he was talking about Cameron, Dr. Cameron from, well, Dr. Mengele Cameron, from the Toronto, Montauk Institute up there in Toronto. I believe I got that right. There was also a very similar, at the same time as well, a very similar operation in London, in England, and a book titled The Sleep Room, a very British medical scandal, just came out. It just was published this year. The author is John Stock, Stock. And that book describes psychiatrist William Sargent, his experimental treatment of women in the 60s and 70s at St. Thomas Hospital in London. So again, the reason I point this out is because all of these psychological operations, they never stopped. They have not stopped. They just changed venues. They went from hospitals now, as he said, essentially to your pocket. They went from using pharmaceuticals to pixels to control you, your behavior. And remember what I said, that about the fear-driven behavior, okay, and emotional responses. They suppress critical thinking. So moving forward, and when I touch on PSYOPs, explain how to identify one without fail, I promise you, you're going to see, it's going to come essentially full circle. You're going to see what, why I'm kind of bookending this episode with those two items, okay? So let's finish out that video. And again, pay attention and make sure you click on that link to watch it, subscribe, whatever you want. I mean, it's well worth it. Subscribe to that channel and really spread the word, because I'm telling you, that information, it's dead nuts accurate. I think you would agree with me on that. Go ahead and continue.
this machine. So what happens at the end of this? We are all programmed to chase validation and followers and aesthetics and power and status. And even when people hit every single target, what happens? They feel nothing. The system doesn't need you dead. It just needs you numb. It needs you to be busy blaming yourself until you forget you were anything more than a user profile in some behavior experiment. And if you're still here, something in you already knows. And maybe you can't explain it. And maybe I can't either. I don't think that's paranoia at all. I think it's memory. I think the part of you that never signed the contract is paying attention. It's a part of you that never forgot. So none of this is about finding yourself. This is about stopping the chase and stopping the performance, stopping the endless need to be what the system rewards. You are not outrage. You are not your social profile. You're not the algorithm's predictions. The very second that you stop feeding the machine, you start starving it. And once you remember that, you can't go back. And you've probably felt it most of your life, like an itch in your gut that none of this crap makes sense. The way that we live is upside down and it feels backward and fake. If you've felt this at all, I'm here to tell you that you were right. This was never your life. It was built for you. It was all scripted and installed. Your real life is still here. It's quiet. It's patient. And it's waiting for you under the noise. And now that you've seen it, the only question left is, who are you without the script? That's the real you. Because the system is starting to crack, and you know it. And your real life is waiting.
That pretty much is that video. And I'm telling you, a lot of great points were made in that. People in the chat, did you find that? Now, you may have seen that before, but did you find that informative, instructive, helpful? Did it appeal to you intellectually? And again, the reason I'm asking this is because, you know, we could drill down on multiple headlines. I would just like to pretty much maintain focus on things that will impact you, all right, and me, all of us, things that instead of covering 100 topics and spending a minute on each, let's cover 10 topics and spend 10 minutes on each, so we really understand what's going on here, what's at play. So hopefully that did provide you with some great life instructions and lessons. And again, you can find the link at HagmanPI.com. And the reason I don't put the links, we don't put the links in the other platforms, first of all, they never work. They're truncated in many cases, and there are limitations. So all of the show notes are at HagmanPI.com. There's nothing more I can do on that. All right. So let's get into what's really going on today. Now, there are a lot of things that are taking place. Again, using that as a bookmark. So understanding that where we're at today really didn't start with the tech age, but it began long ago and it was planned out. And the mental health crisis that we see playing out today, that was planned. That's not an artifact or by accident. That is an intentional mode of destruction from within. All right. Thinking about that, you know, one of the big things right now taking place is the 42.5 million people who are going to be losing their food stamps, EBT, welfare, whatever. That's happened before. Well, when I say it's happened before, the threat has existed before in different shutdowns. In fact, let me, these notes, I have on the digital or digital as opposed to written down. Just so everyone knows, and this is important to cover because this does represent a potential threat to our daily routine. I'm serious about this. And you know what? To the folks in chat, do you think that this is a planned event? Maybe part PSYOP, part, when I say PSYOP in this case, or not false flag or PSYOP, but do you think that the people in power planned for this to happen? This was not, oh, gee whiz. This is just kind of a casualty of the lack of a CR or lack of a budget. There's something more here than that. I think so. I do. Again, now we have, what, 5 days, 4 days, 3 days. 3 days, and then it becomes the first, which is on Saturday. And at that point, the SNAP benefits, as they're called now, are going to be cut off. Now, remember, the last payment was back in October for the, or I'm sorry, it was for the month of October. Okay, so the food stamps, EBT, SNAP, that's been paid through the end of October, through the 31st of October. Now, states can step in if they so choose and fill in some of the holes. I'm not sure they can get them all. But that's one thing that's going on that they could possibly do. But listen to these benefits here. Or listen to the architecture and the historical things that we can turn back and say, okay, did this ever happen before? And if it did, what happened? Or if it didn't, why didn't it happen and what happened? So the SNAP program, which is essentially food stamps, and its mode of delivery, the EBT card, right? That program began in the 1930s. It originated in the 30s. It was formalized as SNAP in 1977 as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That's what SNAP stands for. Back when I was a young person, there were actual food stamps, food coupons, right? I'm sure the boomers out there will remember this, where people, and many shamefully, would go into a grocery store and buy the bare necessities and have, I mean, it was obvious when you turned over a food stamp or food coupon to the cashier as opposed to cash or a debit card. Now they disguise it as an EBT card. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, unless they're looking, they don't know if you're paying by debit, credit, or what your mode of payment is. And again, that's by design for a different reason. But now we're facing with that being cut off because of this government shutdown. That we're already in a government shutdown. The politics of that shutdown, of course, vary widely depending on your party affiliation. But the right says, look, we will pass a clean resolution. The left is saying, no, you've got to pass this. And that includes a lot of pork plus the refunding of the SNAP program. So that's where we're at today. And, you know, although the, and this is important to note, although the Republicans have a majority in both the House and Senate, understand this takes a supermajority, or the 60 votes to pass, whether it's a CR or whatever the issue is here. So when people say, well, the Republicans, they have a majority, it's on you. Not so much. All right. Now, looking at this historically, these benefits have never been fully cut off, okay? Understand that. So right now, we are kind of in uncharted territory. They've never been cut off nationwide in past shutdowns. And I say that to mean that there has been no permanent loss of eligibility or funding. There have been instances of delays of early issuances that created gaps in people receiving that that benefit. And there have been some administrative disruptions, but these affected access to really the new entrance into the EBT cards. Okay, and I know this might sound dry, but it's important to really understand. So where we're at right now is in a place where we haven't seen this particular situation before. Now, you may think, well, wait a second, I do recall some instances, and there were. In 5 days, in November of 1995, and then again that same year, going into 96, 21 days in December, same period of time, the government experienced a shutdown. Because of for the same reasons as now, but the details were a little bit different. But in 1995 and 1996, at this very same time, benefits continued via state-administered systems funded by prior appropriations. If you look what's going on right now, there are no prior appropriations for this situation. So, at that time, and even worse now, new applications recertifications, very important, face backlogs due to the USDA staff, which issues the food coupons, of course, or the EBT cards or SNAP benefits. They were not working, obviously, because why? The government was shut down. So this also happened in 2013, back in October of 2013. But there was no interruption in benefits. This also happened in 2018, 2019. You might recall that. December 22nd through January 25th, which was the longest shutdown on record. There was an interesting thing that happened back then, and you can kind of almost see what's taking place now and kind of compare it. But there was no cutoff of benefits, but there was an early February payment that created about a 6 week gap for many recipients. And that got people complaining quite a bit. But that was in 2018, 2019. It delayed access to money and benefits for about a 6 week period. And now, while no benefits at that time were lost, and I'm sure they won't be this time either, there were a lot of defaults. If you go back during that time period and look, okay, so why did I cover all of this? Well, because I've gone through this before. That was a natural question. And if we have, what happened? No, we kind of brushed by this. And remember, when this program existed, go back before 1990, when this program existed, and when people had food stamps, food coupons, for whatever reason, and I haven't really found the reason behind this, but the states were able to step in any time where there was a budgetary shortfall or cutoff, whatever, and they were able to make sure that there was not a problem with the benefits. All right. So historically, there we are. So in the current context, $8 billion right now for 42 million recipients are at risk of delay or partial halt. And I would say complete halt given the situation. If everything continues through the 31st and into the 1st. Now, if you've been paying attention, half the states have sued the Trump administration because of this shutdown and because of this benefit, and the other half didn't. Well, if you go back and look at previous periods. Well, regardless of that, at least 25 states now, in addition to suing have warned of non-issuance. They've come around and said, look, we don't have the bucks. We don't have the money. So food banks stock up. And others, be advised, we don't have the money. California, Texas, Pennsylvania, New York, for example. They're already saying, no, we don't have the money. Okay. So, again, to sum that up, these benefits have never been permanently cut off or even halted to any meaningful degree. Continuity was ensured through advanced funding, workarounds, and, you know, agreements and congressional agreements, but it doesn't seem, I don't know, maybe it does, but it just doesn't seem to be the case right now. So what are you seeing on social media? Of course, we showed this last week, and you can find all this yourself. Okay, we're going to steal the food. We're going to steal the food from the supermarkets. I watched this on the forums, on chat rooms. We're going to take whatever we need to take for us, whether it's out of your cart, out of your car, out of your house, or out of the store. But we're going to do that. There's a vast number of people. And I'm telling you, it's being reported. And this is not to incite or stoke fear here. This is just from an observational point of view, what I'm seeing. This is going to, people are preparing for violent, I would call this robbery as opposed to anything else, robbing people in stores of food. They feel entitled. Now, going back to the first bookend, how did that ever come about? They feel entitled, right? Okay. When did that? Now, obviously, you saw that video, so you go back 100+ years in the programming of the mind and all of that. But really, in modern times, when did this start? Oh, I should add this, and we'll throw this attachment up if you don't mind. This is attachment 2, Eric the Tech. This is the benefit chart by legal status. Now, this won't be in the show notes. This is just, you can find this chart. And this is compliments of CIS.org. All right. So take a look at that chart. And I'm going to pull it up here on where it's closer to me. And take a look at that chart. And take a look at the time, Yes. Take a look at the chart. Take a look at the U.S.-born headed households, the legal households, legal immigrant households, and the illegals, the people who aren't supposed to be here, who are receiving the benefits. Look at the benefits. Look at the percentages. So clearly, in all cases of handouts, every single handout from any welfare to cash to food to Medicaid to housing, by far, I mean, by big margin, look, these are people in this country who are in this country illegally. So when you think, okay, you had 4 years of this surge into the U.S., right? Obviously. This shutdown and suspension of benefits, it was coming anyway, whether through an inability to pass the budget or the unwillingness to pass a clean CR or through some sort of financial meltdown. So I ask you, could we have foreseen this? Could those in power have foreseen this? Yes. And even further, could they have planned this? I think so. So when you see all these videos out there, and remember, we have been programmed. We have been, our minds have been programmed. Those people who are saying, okay, we're entitled to this. I've got 16 kids by 16 baby daddies, and it's up to you, the taxpayer, to take care of me. Were they born with that instinctual thought? No. No, it was... They were that mindset was created. They were programmed, which is why I think that opening video was so important. When did the programming start? A long time ago. But then You look at what's happening in modern times, in more recent times. All right. Well, this is cut four in the show notes, Eric the Tech. And this is back in 2008. And I've got books upon books upon books upon books about reference books and investigative books and all sorts of stuff, papers. Remember, back in 2004, if I said Barack Hussein Obama, no one, who's that? Unless you lived in Illinois or in Chicago. The ultimate Manchurian candidate by its proper definition. He was a construct and is a construct of the intelligence community. We were warned. We were warned back then. Found this very interesting video of a telephone interview from 18 years ago. Webster Tarpley talking about this. My goodness, name from the past, right? Okay. Cut four, starting about 15 minutes in. I think this is kind of important to remind ourselves, because what we're seeing here with this, and the especially the racial division and his third term, again, as a construct of the intelligence communities, well, that's why we're here now. This was planned out back then, and it's planned out right now by him. So let's go to cut A of video four. Watch this.
In it. Now, why do I say this? If we look at Obama, one of the first things you notice in his biography, which has been very little discussed, is that he has an entire pedigree about the left wing of the CIA. Now, this is something that we haven't seen lately. What we've been looking at is the right wing of the CIA, the killers, the 9/11 people who brought you that. But there's another wing, and it's been very active. It just hasn't been much talked about on the domestic front. There's something called the National Endowment for Democracy. There's the Soros Foundations, the Ford Foundation in particular. We know that under Reagan's Executive Order 12333, many traditional Cold War CIA functions were privatized into these foundations. You've got Gene Sharp and the Albert Einstein Institute up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that goes around overthrowing governments in Ukraine, in Georgia, in Serbia. They tried in Lebanon, didn't work. Tried in Belarus, didn't work. They're obviously trying right now in China. Zbigniew Brzezinski and the left wing of the CIA with the Soros people and Gene Sharp are obviously attempting to overthrow the government of China right now today.
All right, well, you can cut B. Isn't it interesting? You're hearing some of the same names. Okay, back in 21 in the early 20th century, 1921 or early 20th century, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefellers, and advance that to the current today. Obviously, not Zbigniew Brzezinski, but Mika Brzezinski on the morning show. Wow, okay. You get the connection, the daughter of the elder Brzezinski, but in a position of what? Propaganda. And remember, too, back during the early 21st century, once Obama came onto the world stage, into the U.S. stage, remember the cheerleaders and the people behind them. So you have the intelligence construct that is Obama being propped up by the intelligence apparatus that is the media and the perfect Manchurian candidate to usher in what? This global world order slash digital age, and you have this animus toward Donald Trump, not because he can sometimes be a dick, right? But because he disrupted everything. He ruined their plans, plural. But put yourself back in the 2008 time period, before or right around Obama's inauguration or election. And think about what was being said about him back then. We were saying the same thing. I was writing the same stuff. But think also and consider also today, how we got here today, and what Obama's role in what's happening today was. And again, you may think this is really not necessary, but you know, I think it adds to that whole, when you're looking at when you're putting a puzzle together, for example, you'll have all the pieces, and it's kind of satisfying to have all of the pieces in place. So this kind of does that. Here's cut B.
Specifically, just one note. If you look at Obama, he's got Ford Foundation written all over him. His mother, the anthropologist Stanley Ann Dunham, his mother was named Stanley for a peculiarity of the family. Stanley Ann Dunham, left-wing anthropologist, worked for the Ford Foundation. She also worked for the World Bank, USAID, and so forth, but Ford Foundation. Obama worked for the Gamaliel Foundation. He was what I would call a counterinsurgency, community control, local control organizer on the south side of Chicago, on the payroll of the Gamaliel Foundation. Well, what is that? It is the institution of the Saul Alinsky method of counterinsurgency through community control. In other words, prevent the emergence of a unified challenge against financier rule by dividing everybody by race, by neighborhood, into these impotent parochial little operations that never have a chance of fighting back against something like the Chicago financial community or Wall Street. The Gamaliel Foundation is a satellite of the Ford Foundation. That is where they get a lot of their support. So we've seen the mother worked for the Ford Foundation. Obama, in this community control phase that he was in, worked essentially for a satellite of the Ford Foundation. Obama sat on the board of the Woods Fund, and he was rubbing elbows there with Bill Ayers, a weatherman terrorist bomber who boasted that he had attacked and bombed the New York City police headquarters, the Pentagon, and the United States Capitol during the era of the absolutely bankrupt and, in my view, proto-fascist or indeed fascist reign of the weathermen, who I regard as provocateurs that were sent in to students for the Democratic Society to destroy it, and destroy it they did in short order. But these people, Bill Ayers and his charming wife Bernadine Dorn, the most extreme Maoist of that weatherman clique, are now honored professors. They've been given tenure despite their criminal records, I suppose, and they're now, one of them is sitting at the Woods Fund, and these are people who were part of Obama's campaign committee back in Chicago when he ran for state senate. Oh, but the Woods Fund, where did they get their money? They give money to various radical Palestinian groups, and I think you'd have to look at the relation of those Palestinian groups to the U.S. intelligence community, since that is what is implied here, right? The CIA does not pay for nothing. They pay for services rendered, and they need to maintain assets, agents of influence, and so forth. So the Woods Fund gets a lot of its money from the Ford Foundation. So if you're keeping score, the mother worked for the Ford Foundation directly. Obama worked for a satellite of the Ford Foundation, sat on the board of a fund, which is a satellite of the Ford Foundation. Now let's focus.
All right. So when you think about the what was Obama's big thing back then? Obviously, he was a community organizer, but again, as a construct of the intelligence community, communities plural, he set up, he really plowed the ground, prepared the ground for what everything we're seeing today. And if you, the reason I thought that specific clip was so important is because obviously he mentioned Bill Ayers and some other people in organizations, NGOs. They're still active today. If you look at, for example, the 4 years of Biden really didn't run anything as we are seeing now. But with the exposure to the Biden regime, him being a virtual vegetable, not really signing anything, it, obviously you've seen the memes, Biden's auto pen, and there's a picture of Obama, right? That's not that far off, but the people handling the internal day-to-day affairs of that 4 years, when there was really, when Biden was, you know, I don't know, when he was just being a vegetable, right? Are the very same people who surrounded Obama back in Chicago as a community activist. Some of this, as well as people in Obama's administration, Anita Dunn, for example, being named as one of the individuals in the Biden inner circle that was running the government. Again, Anita Dunn, Cass Sunstein, all of these Obama disciples in the Biden White House. And if you look at January 6th, or I'm sorry, if you look at the Russian collusion hoax, many of these people were involved in the plotting, planning, scheming, and even in some cases, the implementation of the takedown, an attempted treasonous, seditious takedown of Donald Trump during his first term. All right. One more minute. Cut C. This is 1 minute long, and I think maybe, I can't remember why I put this in there, but I'll be surprised. Here is cut C.
To address Jeremiah Wright. In other words, what he's saying is, when you feel those pangs of conscience, you, as the black overclass that has emerged under affirmative action, as you look at the white financier elite that you're dealing with, and then as you look down to the black underclass, the 80% who are still mired in poverty with virtually no opportunity, you can have an easy conscience because you need to remember slavery, apartheid, Jim Crow, the Sharpeville massacre, and all these other things. And then, of course, he embroiders it in the way that we've heard. Therefore, I would describe what Jeremiah Wright is offering as a synthetic religion created, we might say, at Union Theological Seminary, perhaps, but certainly propagated with the help at all levels of the Ford Foundation, to create a greater division, in other words, to take the black-white division and to project this into the realm of theology. Now, just one last point. Is this typical of the black church? Now, I'm not an expert in the black church, but I've certainly campaigned politically in quite a lot of black churches. I would say no. That the black church teaches, at least two-thirds to three-quarters of black churches that I can see, teach what is much closer to traditional Christianity. In other words, a religion of charity and, faith, hope, and charity, what St. Paul prescribed for Christians. There was a study done in the early 1990s about the interest of black churches in this black liberation theology, what Wright and Hopkins and Otis Moss and Cohen, above all, represent. And what they found was that there were about 25 to 30% of black churches who had been substantially influenced by black liberation theology. And the interesting thing is, these were...
Not black liberation theology. Remember the role that played back in 2000, really in 2008. And look at what's happening today, especially with the TikTok videos, in the context, for example, of the government shutdown, the cutting off of EBT or SNAP benefits. So this, again, was an exacerbation of that. All right. So is this all coincidence? No, it's not. It was planned. Okay. Now, kind of a slight pivot now, but still related. So under Biden, this would have happened, I believe, under Clinton, but it happened. Biden took the reins with this, or I should say his people took the reins, opened the border, surge, get all kinds of anybody you can, from terrorists to whatever, in this country. 30 million flooding into this country. They've got nothing in common with the Western culture. Nothing in common with our culture whatsoever. The vast majority of those. They did not come here for a better life. That was, that was a programming. You know this. They came here to plunder, to steal, and to take over. We're fighting that now. The U.S. is now fighting that. So it's natural to see who's fighting the people who are fighting the invasion. Who's fighting the people who are trying to rid the country of terrorists, bad people, really bad people. I'll show you in a second here. It's people like the usual suspects. Letitia James, mortgage fraud, for example, in her case, not enough. We have to do things to really fight against the system. This is cut six, 28 seconds. This is Letitia James. And she's one of several leftist ideologues in government, holding a government position of some kind, fighting against law and order and a secure border, fighting against ridding our country of some bad people. But it's even worse than that. They're setting something up here. They're setting this up. So ICE agents who are doing the job have huge targets on their back. They're doxing these people. How do you think that's going to end? They know how it's going to end. They know how they want it to end. Is this something new? Well, not in the context of the bigger picture, but this is what's taking place. So her and people like Jasmine Crockett and others within the government at government levels are now saying, hey, we're going to identify the ICE agents. Here's cut six.
Attorney General Letitia James announcing a new portal where residents can send photos and videos of ICE operations. James says the portal is meant to review and investigate legal violations by agents, and her statement referenced Tuesday's immigration raid in Chinatown in New York City. Meantime, House Democrats say they will launch their own similar ICE tracker. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi criticizing that effort, citing a sharp increase in violence against law enforcement. Coming up later.
All right. That's just one of many, and that's probably the least offensive maneuver, because what she's asking for is the photographs. But the true doxing is happening at various levels of other government officials or people with some level of influence. And that does, by the way, include influencers on the left, Blue Sky, my goodness, they're just rife with all sorts of doxing maneuvers and measures over at the Blue Sky, for example. So you have a lot of this going on. So somebody is going to be killed. There will be war. There will be blood on the streets. Now, that's not a programmed, or I don't want, again, we cannot engage or should not engage in fear-driven behavior, but we have to recognize it, don't we? When I think we are recognizing it. But what is the other darker part of this? I want to show you this. Man, this is hard to talk about. This is hard to talk about. This is cut or page seven. This is an ex post. Think about this for a second. Remember how we talk about child sex trafficking and, of course, shatterops.org and Save Them, two organizations, Craig Sawyer, in this platform, we've worked together for years in fighting and attempting to and identifying what's going on. Now, the article, this X post links to an article from, I believe it was the Daily Mail. Let me look. It was the Daily Mail, and it's no longer valid, or it's behind a paywall. I'm sorry. But this article talks again, you've got the child labor and the human smuggling. You've got all of these different components of that porous border. We've talked about this before, but this is probably one of the worst of the worst of the worst. And Tulsi Gabbard, you're going to see her in a second here. the director of national intelligence, talked about the operations that led to the arrest of someone identified as La Diabla. And she is an associate of the Jalisco New Generation Cartel, which is a Mexican cartel that is engaged in human child sex trafficking, as well as drug trafficking and human smuggling. But Gabbard was talking about this arresting a woman identified or called La Diabla, but she was identified as Martha Alicia Mendez Aguilar. Eric the Tech, I don't think, does that have a picture in there of her? Or probably not. All right. Okay. I have one. If you want to search her name, you can if you want. It's up to you. Folks, you can look. It doesn't matter. But this woman, again, Martha Alicia Mendez Aguilar, she was apprehended in Juarez, Mexico. And this goes back to September 2nd. They were cleaning up operations, just announced here recently. And Gabbard superintended this operation to get this woman in connection with the National Counterterrorism Center. All right. So that La Diabla translates to the she-devil in Spanish. And she is accused of, and as far as I'm concerned, is guilty of a criminal network involving human trafficking. Her crew performed illegal C-sections on pregnant women, harvesting their organs, selling newborn babies to couples in the U.S. for about $250,000. You know, that's about 15 grand, give or take. It's one of the most insidious cases out there. And you can do the search on this yourself. But understand, this woman with a network of disciples, followers, and cartel members would kidnap women from Mexico and women from the United States, depending on the day and the operation, who are pregnant. They would stalk them and kidnap them. In some cases, south of the border, they would promise them entry into the U.S. But what would ultimately happen is they would take them to a nondescript warehouse house or someplace unoccupied, perform a C-section, take the baby alive, in some cases, or in a lot of cases, and then sell that baby to American couples here in the U.S. Meanwhile, they would harvest the woman's organs and sell them on the black market. Pretty hard to talk about, isn't it? But now she right now is in Mexican custody. Boy, that gives me the warm fuzzies, right? But think about this. There was a follow-up article, or maybe as part of the article itself, how American couples paid 14 grand for babies cut, and you can keep that up there, paid 14,000 for babies cut from mothers' wombs by a woman called the She-Devil. And this article, I have to find the link. If I find the link, I'll put it in the show notes. But this article details, for example, how this She-Devil ran this baby trafficking operation for this CJNG cartel out of Juarez, Mexico, which is directly across the border from El Paso. But she, again, she lured pregnant women, often poor, looking for work, to remote areas. And they were forced into these brutal C-sections. They take the newborns, and remember this, that you want that Biden regime, they facilitated this. You want to know what a lot of, remember when Alex Jones was down in Mexico and he was standing in front of that car? I don't even know if I have a video of that. Remember that? This is part of that operation. And you know who specifically. This, again, think about how this is not coincidental. Who are they marketing these children to? Yes, American couples, but who are they marketing these children to? Homosexual couples. That's right. Again, coincidence? I don't think so. All right, that's enough of that. Now, but do you get, in a sense, do you get why? Oh, we can't stop these ICE. I mean, we have to stop these ICE deportations. I mean, but my goodness, for the sake of these poor people coming in, what exactly do they want? Why are they so vicious to stop ICE, to identify people here in the United States that are beneficiaries of these people coming in? And you saw that chart that was put up about the recipients of the welfare. And think about Obama, too, about this cultural Marxism, this Marxist Maoist operated, this whole ideology that really propelled where we're at today. Yeah, it was thought of, again, 100 plus years ago, longer than that. But the functional part we're seeing today really began with Obama. All right. So there's that. I'm going to move right into this because I think this is extremely important. Obviously, a big part of stopping and jailing forever President Trump and for smashing the ideology, our ideology of, hey, you know what? We choose him over what we had, we choose President Trump over Biden or Harris or whatever, whoever the next person might be. January 6th, a lot of information, a lot of new information. Have you seen this? It's coming out about January 6th in two areas. Well, actually three. You have the incident itself, which now we know that, yeah, 274 feds, the FBI agents in the crowd. Okay. Wow, that was a big surprise, right? But now it's been confirmed. We knew that, but now it's on record. It's been confirmed. So January 6th served a specific purpose, and that was the plan was by Pelosi, by the J6 committee, who by the way received all received pardons through the Biden auto pen. Now we're fine, and again, this is all coming out, and it's all purposeful. But the auto pen was supposed to be authorized by Biden, used only when necessary. But it was abused, and of course, the people behind it were the same people that were with Obama back in 08. Anita Dunn, as one example. And the architects of this planned destruction, the very same Marxist Maoist ideologues. Remember that picture? By the way, I just happened to think of this. Remember that picture when Obama, or I'm sorry, when the when Obama was leaving the last day, leaving the Oval Office, and President Trump was coming in. And remember that picture was it then? Or was it? Yeah, I think it was then. Of the staff outside, all looking, I mean, they had their arms crossed. They were looking like the world had ended for them. This operation, these operations I'm referencing now, this continuation of this molding one's behavior was being disrupted. And that's what they were pissed about, in part. But, okay, so new information is coming out. And I lost my train of thought on the three aspects, but it doesn't really matter because you'll get this anyway. So new information is coming out about January 6th. Now, you may have seen this. I want to start with this. You may have already seen this. The former Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund. This is not new, but this is necessary as kind of the foundational video for the real story behind January 6th. You may look at this in a different light. And then we're going to move quickly on to, you know what? Before we go there, before we go to January 6th, let's do that because the time's a little. Again, there will be links in the show notes that are not, we didn't play like videos and such. We didn't play. So let's go to video three, cut three. This is Chief Sund and talking about the events of January 6th. And think about this now in the context of the recent revelations about what we knew to be true, but didn't have proof. We now have proof, but there's more. So this is kind of a foundational video, cut three. Here it is.
About why I lied to Vice President Pence, why I gave him false information.
But let's talk about after the fact, following January 6th, you were ultimately forced to resign. I mean, what happened there? How did that unfold?
So I'm up all night. I don't think I slept for about 38 hours. We're briefing members of Congress the very next day about, you know, what our plan is for the Capitol. We got them back into session. It's interesting because, you know, I kept getting a call from Vice President Pence asking me to come over to a secure location. He didn't leave the Hill, okay, to a secure location to brief him. I kept telling him I can't leave the command center right now. So finally at about 5 o'clock, we started getting things under control. About 5:15, I went ahead and said, I'm going to go ahead and go over and brief him. I notified the two sergeant arms. I go over and brief him, and he gets Pelosi on the phone because my information tells me we can get them back in the session at 7 p.m., 7:30 at the latest. He gets Speaker Pelosi on the phone, sets it right on the ledge, like right between us. I brief, you know, as well. And they decide, okay, great, she's going to brief the leadership. I'm walking out of that meeting, and I'm walking back through a tunnel, and I run into Mike Stanger. He's walking over to brief the Senate, asked me, will you come brief the Senate with me? I said, not a problem. He's my boss. And someone hands up a phone, and it's Speaker Pelosi, and she is mad as can be. She is chewing me out about why I lied to Vice President Pence, why I gave him false information. They're being told they can't get into a session for at least 24 hours. I said, no, ma'am, my information's correct. That's the second time I talked to her, and she hangs up the phone.
What?
Yeah. So I walk over to the Senate. They end up getting me back on another conference call to brief all of leadership before we go in and brief the Senate. I never did brief the Senate. I actually had to leave to come back to the command center. So there's three times I talked to Speaker Pelosi. So the next day, we're briefing members of Congress. We're trying to set up a meeting with Speaker Pelosi's office to do a brief there. 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm briefing Senator Blunt. I'm in a conference room, and I see my chief of staff step out. She steps back in. And she says, you need to step outside. I got to talk to you real quick. And she notifies me that Speaker Pelosi is getting ready to go on national TV and call for my resignation. Yep. I had enough time to notify my wife. I wasn't going to go and watch the news press conference. I kind of expected, you
know, you
kind of knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But my chief of staff and my general counsel said, now let's go in and watch it. Watch it. And 23 minutes into the press conference, someone asks, you know, about what about the security failures? And she blatantly comes out and says it was a failure of leadership at the top of Capitol Police, calls for my resignation, says it was a failure on my part, and then says, besides, he's never even called me since this occurred. I've talked to her three times.
Yeah. So obviously that entire event was orchestrated. And a recent episode podcast with Benny Johnson, where he was talking about sitting next to Alex Jones, and as the events unfolded that day, what the information Alex was getting in real time, bottom line, they realized through the information Alex was getting in real time, they realized, wait a second, this whole thing was a setup. Yeah, a little late, I get that, but nonetheless, Alex did what he could to push the people back, get the people back. So what we're seeing now is the response to that, to his work, to his exposés about January 6th being this Fed insurrection, which is pretty much taken on that name And of course, that exposes the J6 committee. It exposes Pelosi. It exposes some pretty important and high profile people, which is why doesn't excuse it, but it's one of the reasons why we saw the great purging of the people at January 6th. Isn't it amazing how, but they can't find, for example, a person who planted, allegedly planted, or planted alleged pipe bombs at the DNC and RNC. All right. This topic alone deserves a deeper dive, because, yeah, I'm not really impressed with the speed by which Dan Bongino and Kash Patel, or more specifically, Pam Bondi, is operating. But, all right, take a breath again. Take a breath, and let's just look at what we're seeing now. Last week, or within the last 10 days, the FBI released new footage of the pipe bomber. Remember, the FBI came out initially with $500,000 reward for any information leading to the arrest of the person or persons who planted the pipe bombs at the DNC and RNC. Y'all know about that, right? We don't have to dig deep into that. Okay. All right. So the FBI initially provided badly edited video of the suspect. Poorly edited video. In fact, they slowed it down to like just this mind-numbing. It was inexplicable unless you understood, and I know you do, that they really did not want this individual to be arrested or found. All right. So let's bring it to the most recent disclosures by the FBI. All right. Last week, they updated. Did y'all see this? They updated the video and some information. Let's go right to the source. Let's go right to the FBI. Now, we may pause here because this is kind of a long stretch of tape. But pay attention to the details. Some new, some you know, some you may not. But pay attention to the details. And Eric the Tech, if you don't mind, just keep your finger on that pause button. And we'll see where it goes from here. But this is the new advisory. Here it is.
Between 7:30 and 8:30 p.m., an unidentified individual placed pipe bombs near the offices of the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee in Washington, D.C. The FBI and our partners are renewing our call for tips from the public to help us identify the suspect. A reward of up to $500,000 is available for information that leads to the arrest and conviction of the individual responsible for this attempted attack. If you have any information, please call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI. You can also submit tips online at tips.fbi.gov. The FBI's estimate is the suspect's height is approximately 5'7" tall. The suspect wore a face mask, a gray hooded sweatshirt, and black gloves. They used a backpack to transport each of the devices. They were wearing distinctive Nike Air Max Speed Turf shoes, which are black and gray with the yellow Nike logo. Fewer than 25,000 of these shoes were sold between August 2018 and January 2021. The first time the suspect is seen is at approximately 7:34 p.m. at the intersection of First Street and North Carolina Avenue.
I hope people don't get angry for me doing this. Okay, so there was a lot of information contained in that first section. Let's work backwards with the shoes. 25,000 pairs of shoes sold in that time period. I believe they had just come out. They came out and they hit the store shelves, I think, at that earliest date. And then, of course, they cut that off at January 6th. So 25,000, you could take 25 agents, really, and push toward, each give them 1,000 sales, or 100 maybe, points of sale / distribution. And you could knock that out in a couple of weeks. But hey, why make it easy? The second thing, I put this up on my X feed, and I had some dialogue with Julie Kelly, all right, who I'm going to mention here momentarily. And folks, I'm going to tell you two things. Just let this kind of marinate in the back of your mind as you continue watching this. Number one, I believe that person is not a he, but a she. I think it's a female. And number two, no, we'll leave it right there. Well, I'll just add this. Remember at the beginning, I said really 2/3 of interaction with others is nonverbal or behavior. Simply put, the behavior, the movements, the nonverbal behavior of an individual. Keep both of those points in the back of your mind as you watch this, as you continue to watch this. And remember, we are supposed to believe that these devices were planted on January 5th based on that, based on the FBI's timeline. You heard the times. Sat in the open for some 17, roughly, hours, undiscovered. And also, you had Kamala Harris going to the DNC inexplicably at the very moment, or very close to when they were discovered. That one was discovered at the DNC. You get the idea, right? This is nothing more than an elaborate stage play from the Capitol to these pipe bombs. I will say this, though. You break this open, I guarantee 100% you break this open, you identify that suspect and make an arrest, that will change the course and history of the United States forever. I'm telling you, it's that big of a deal. Think about that for a second as you continue to watch that. So think about my assessment. I believe, because I watched this numerous times, the old footage with the new footage. And I don't know. That's my thoughts. Watch the movements, the behavior. In the shoes, too. Yeah, well, that is what it is. Go ahead and continue with that.
Southeast. The person walks southwest on North Carolina Avenue, turns north on New Jersey Avenue, west on D Street, and then south on South Capitol Street. This footage of the suspect on South Capitol Street shows the person setting down their backpack, which is believed to contain one of the bombs at this time. The suspect appears to put on a pair of glasses and scan the area, standing on tiptoes. Before picking up the backpack, turning around, and heading back the way they came on South Capitol Street. After reaching the corner of D Street, the suspect turns around again, and this time walked south all the way down South Capitol Street to a bench outside the Democratic National Committee headquarters building. We see the suspects sit on the bench for a few minutes. They do not place the bomb at this time. The suspect then walks east on Ivy Street. North on New Jersey Avenue, and then pauses near the corner of D Street before retracing their steps back to the DNC bench where the first bomb is placed.
Set to like 6:15 or 6:10. Man. Yeah, Russ, good.
South on New Jersey Avenue. Northeast on North Carolina Avenue. When we lose video coverage of the suspect at approximately 8 p.m.
Now you're going to see
8 minutes later at about 8:08 p.m. We pick the suspect back up on camera heading north on 2nd Street. The suspect walks west on C Street, enters an alley that leads to Rumsey Court, and then walks west on Rumsey Court.
All right, now pay attention here.
This footage shows the suspect pass between the RNC and the Capitol Hill Club, holding the backpack out to the side. The person continues between the RNC and the Capitol Hill Club, then continues north on 1st Street, east on C Street, back into the alley toward Rumsey Court, back onto Rumsey Court. Place the second pipe bomb at approximately 8:16 p.m. The suspect then turns back onto Rumsey Court, walking east until the person is last seen on camera at approximately 8:18 p.m., wearing the backpack on their shoulders. The bomb is believed to have been placed shortly before this video, based on how the suspect is carrying the backpack.
All right,
we still believe there is some.
You can, folks, you can watch the entire thing. But here's the issue I have. And I'm just wondering in the chat, because obviously I can't, if you're watching this the next day or if you're just listening to this, I really can't get your input. But in the chat, how many do you think it's possible that's a female? I'm just asking. I'd like to see your responses to that. And the second thing, those shoes. The best I could come up with is they add about 3/4, and I'm rounding on this, about 3/4 of an inch to one's height. So if the height is estimated to be 5'7", you're looking at someone about 5'6"-ish, okay? All right. So some people are saying, yeah, it's possible it could be a female. Okay. All right. Now, the part of this story too is of all the nights, of all the times for the cell network to have corrupted files, it had just happened to be January 5th. Just go figure. All right. So all that's said and done, Here's why I believe, and this again is to me, if an arrest is made on this, it will change the course of our history, because this was, in my view, based on my research, analysis, investigation, as limited as it has been, this will identify individuals within the system who are part of and still part of an attempt to take down the U.S. from within. This was an extremely orchestrated event that took place. And let's not forget, Kamala Harris, for whatever reason, again, at the DNC, and suddenly this pipe bomb appeared there, or was found there, just happened to be when she was inside the DNC. Why was she at the DNC when her presence would have been really big at the Capitol? No one knows. She hasn't explained it. And her book, of course, memoir, really doesn't address any of that. Okay. Now, let's talk about Joey Kelly for a second. This is where it gets really, really interesting. And this is where I think, I got to tell you right now, I do believe that if anyone has a very specific answer to what's going on, it's Julie and Darren Beatty and a few others. Okay. And you watch her very, I mean, pay attention to what she writes, pay attention to what she says, her interviews. Perhaps I might have her on. I'm not sure, because she's a busy woman. But let's go to page one of the show notes here. Easy to find for you guys. This is a very unlucky, from lucky neighbor to unreliable witness. Wow. Now, who found the pipe bomb that was closest to the RNC? In her piece, she identifies that person as Carlin Younger, a female. Okay. And I should add this. A grand jury is going to be impaneled early next year in the Southern District of Florida. Remember, location, location, location. In this case, good. To consider, quote, a grand conspiracy case against those accused of using government power in this decade-long crusade aimed at destroying Donald Trump and the MAGA movement, more importantly, aimed at destroying the U.S. All right. Now, she gives a little bit of history, which is important for those who don't really know the history, or for a good recap. And of course, with respect to this incident, the FBI immediately released a photo of a hoodie-clad individual carrying a backpack and wearing a face mask. Okay, so it goes. But if you scroll down, Eric the Tech, to, let's see, the first video. Let's see here. There's, you got to X out of that. Okay, so there is surveillance footage. Let's see here. Of Carlin Younger. There it is, right there. Now, think about this. Think about this really carefully. Carlin Younger is the individual who found that pipe bomb at the RNC, or near the RNC. Okay. It was actually in an alleyway. It was situated next to a rat trap. If there's any kind of message from that, there it is. Now, she left her apartment. This person who found this, Carlin Younger, left her apartment at exactly 12 noon. Okay. Time's important here. She walks to this laundromat, this communal laundromat, puts clothes in, and walks back to her apartment. So goes her story. Okay. So as written there, surveillance footage corroborates Younger's laundry-oriented story, her initial story. She left her apartment at exactly noon. She's carrying what appears to be a laundry bag. She enters the alley between the RNC and Capitol Hill Club to use a nearby communal but isolated laundry room at 1203. Again, this is important information. And the link to Julie's Substack will be in the show notes. She left, returned to her apartment, made it there by 1204 p.m. So that was trip number one. That was when she said she did her first load of laundry. Makes sense. It's fine. All right. But Younger told two different stories as to why she went back to the laundry room just before 1240 p.m. Now, remember, the timer on this pipe bomb, it was a 60-minute kitchen timer, and it was set, or she saw it at the 20 minutes left of the timer, okay? So that would make it for a 1 o'clock planned detonation, correct? Correct, right. All right, but there's a problem with her story. We have the 302s. I've got them, and I'll put them in the show notes, a link to the 302s, which are the FBI interviews to witness interviews to the pipe bomb incident, more than one. Her story changed. It morphed. It became different. And another thing, her place of employment. Listen to this. And you know this. This is no secret. It was made known before. Let me just make sure I get the name correctly here. What was it? First Energy? Her place of employment. I'm not going to spend a lot of time. I should know it by heart. My goodness. Her place of employment obviously was connected to the federal response to crisis events. Again, not big on coincidences. I want, again, in the interest of time and people's interest, period. Where is, okay, if you go, let's see, down from that video, there is video of her interviews, I believe, plural, with Madison. She's from Madison, Wisconsin. There it is right there. She's from Madison, Wisconsin. And she only gave interviews to her hometown news outlets. Okay. But why? Well, they celebrated her as a hero, averting disaster, right? In fact, I think she was awarded a medal by the Madison mayor, but I digress. Hailed as a hero or heroine. Let's listen to what she's got to say. Go ahead and hit that play button.
Well, I was doing a now infamous load of laundry, just changing it over from the washer to the dryer. When I went downstairs to put the first load into the dryer, that's when something caught my eye. And I'm a big recycler, so it really caught my eye because I thought someone had just missed the recycling can and it looked kind of metalish and I was going to put it back in. My first reaction was, this has got to be trash, until I kind of leaned closer and saw that, in fact, it was something that looked like a bomb. And the first thing I saw was wires. And the next thing was 6 inches of pipe capped on both ends. And then I had to lean closer. And that's when I see this dial and it has a hand on 20. And then I see the number and I lean closer and I lean to listen. I'm like, is that 20 seconds? Is it ticking? You're on that edge of, I don't want to bother anybody, right? Like, I want to make sure this is real. You don't want to go down as the person who evacuates a city block for a hoax. But at the same time, there was just enough of that gut instinct that said, this isn't a place that you'd put a hoax. I have to have somebody check this out. It was actually a scene from Terminator that came to mind where one character tells another not to disturb the pipe. And I'm like, okay, so I can't move it. And what if somebody else finds it? And that's when the adrenaline hit. And the police response after that was pretty immediate. I mean, I was barely in my apartment a few minutes before I started to see the canine unit sniffing around. This is a neighborhood, right? There are all generations that live here. And this bomb was placed in a way that really could have hurt people. I mean, the thing I keep coming back to is just how lucky I was. Nobody else, like a child who plays in the alley, found it, or a sanitation worker who was just doing their job and it went off at the wrong time. I'm just so grateful that nobody got hurt. I mostly just say I got really lucky.
If you can, Eric the Tech, if you can go to go to that pause at the picture of the pipe bomb next to the rat trap. That black thing is a rat trap, by the way. And to the left, at the far left of the picture, is a dumpster. How telling of a place to of a place to put that, right? All right, a couple of things noted by Julie Kelly, and there was some discussion that we had about this. She offered an incredibly precise description of the pipe bomb. I mean, very detailed, a 6-inch pipe. And again, you would think, given her proximity to that device, you would think, well, wait a second, oh, hold on a second. You would describe it as a 6-inch, and to law enforcement. Now, I get the fact that after the fact, she's talking to the media, but to law enforcement, she describes it as an approximate 6-inch piece of metal pipe capped at both ends. And you heard her description, right? Is that how you would describe it to law enforcement? On maybe a 911 call? Just asking. Another question I had, and y'all know this, if you watch any TV at all, somebody stumbles upon a corpse, a dead body. They'll say a dead body in the alleyway. Who do the cops, who do the investigating officers interview first? That's right. The person who found the dead body. Obviously, that's investigations 101. When did the Capitol Police and the responding agencies, including the FBI, when did they interview her? Good question. Notes suggest an interview with her was not really a priority. Why? Why deviate from the investigative norms? Just asking. Inquiring minds want to know. Am I suggesting anything here in terms of complicity? No, but I got questions. I have questions. Especially with the time. Imagine how lucky that is. You leave your apartment exactly at 12 noon and you find it with 20 minutes left. When you go for a second to put more clothes in, about 40 minutes later, yet with 20 minutes left on the timer. Wow. The planets, the stars, everything lines up. Incredible. And again, I'm not casting any stones at anyone. I'm asking. Folks, read the Declassified by Julie Kelly. Read the latest from her. She was ultimately interviewed by the FBI, but it certainly wasn't a priority for them. Despite their dangling of $500,000 of reward money, and even the latest, even the updated iteration of the entirety of the footage, I'll just say this: even that entirety contains edited video of the so-called pipe bomber. So all of this. Take all of this, combine it all together, and take a step back for a second. What in the hell is going on in this country? You got all hell promised to break loose starting Saturday when none of the 42.5 million people can get their food for nothing. You got a whole bunch of those 50-some% illegals in this country, brought in during Biden regime. You have the people around Obama just infused with Biden to kind of push this policy forward or push the agenda forward. Then you've got the exposure of January 6th, stuff we knew that's being confirmed. And then this is new.